Welcome to This Grit and Grace Life. You've got questions, we've got answers. From the boardroom to the bedroom, car lines to college, single, married, or single again, we're bringing real answers to help you live and love your grit and grace life.
Welcome to This Grit and Grace Life. I'm Darlene Brock.
Welcome back, friends. I'm Julie Bender.
All right, Julie, do you remember, it was a little while back that we did a podcast with Helen Smallbone?
I do remember. I loved hearing her story. If you've not heard it yet, Helen is the mom to Rebecca and St. James. If you were into Christian music in the, 90s? Early 2000s, you definitely know her. And if you listen to Christian music now, you definitely know for King and Country.
You do. And she wrote a book called Behind the Lights. But what you may or may not know is they've now made that into a movie.
Ooh.
It's called Unsung Hero, which is Helen, and it's about their journey from Australia to here.
Well, before we get to talking to Helen about her book that ultimately became this movie, we wanted to go a little bit behind the scenes on making of movies with maybe some of your favorites. Did you know that Buzz Lightyear from Toy Story, in case that needs, you know, explanation, almost had a different name? He was going to be Lunar Larry. Lame. I like Buzz Lightyear way better.
I like it way, way better. Agreed. Chris Pratt apparently stole his Star-Lord costume from the set of Guardians of the Galaxy so he could show up in costume to visit sick kids in the hospital who might need to meet Star-Lord.
Well, that is just very sweet.
That or he stole it and then he had to have a reason for it. I'm not sure.
Like, I feel like they would have let him use it, though, to do such a good work.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me and pretty smart. Tom Hanks was not paid for Forrest Gump. Instead, he took percentage points, which ultimately netted him in the region of $40 million.
Sometimes Genius. When you know you got a hit, oof, you go to work and think the money's going to come later.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was smart. All right, Gal Gadot was part of the reshoots for the movie Wonder Woman, including stunts, while being 5 months pregnant. Her baby bump was visible, so the crew created a costume which had a green screen around her belly, which was later removed during post-production. Do you know what a green screen is?
Yeah, so it's like they can change the background.
Yeah, it's just basically they shoot a blob of green and they can put anything into where that green is.
I mean, the magic of editing.
Yeah. Wouldn't we all love to have our, you know, thighs green screened and then trim them down? I think it'd be great.
In Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indy shoots the sword fighter, that scene was supposed to be a fight scene, which would have taken 3 days of filming. However, Ford was sick from dysentery, so he convinced Steven Spielberg to just let him pull the gun and go back to bed.
I think that was brilliant, right? And it is one of the best scenes in the movie. I love it. The girl who voiced Boo in Monsters, Inc. was an actual toddler. Now 20, here's what she said. They would follow me around the recording studio, use puppets to talk to me, and have my mom tickle me or take money candy away from me so I would laugh or cry.
I mean, genius, actually.
Or abuse. Take a pick.
Okay. Well, I'm just thinking like they're capturing real toddler feelings.
That's true. That's
and last true. But not least, this was amazing. When Horace and Data Wilcox founded Hollywood in 1887, they hoped it would become a religious community. Prohibitionists, they banned liquor from the town and offered free land to anyone willing to build a church.
Come a long way, haven't we?
It didn't quite go that way.
It didn't. But, you know, well, good intentions. That's great. All right. When we did the interview with Helen, you know, about her book, it was actually an amazing conversation because she did not raise her kids in a predictable manner.
That's right, Dar. And that's why we wanted to bring this episode back, especially in celebration of her new movie, Unsung Hero, coming out now. Don't miss this conversation where Helen chats about her unique and unexpected life with her very large family.
Helen, it is so good to have you with us today at this Grit and Grace Life podcast.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I know I've known you for a very, 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 shall I add four more verys, long time, but I'm excited for our audience to get to know you and Julie to get to know you a little bit better too. But before we jump in there, can you give me a little bit of background of who you are, your family, a little bit of that? Let's start there.
Well, I'm 66 years old, so I'm actually in sort of retirement age, but I feel sometimes very aware that God has different plans from what we may have for ourselves. I'm married to my husband, David, for 46 years. Wow. We have 7 children. We have what I call bookend girls, and then 5 boys in the middle. We are originally from Australia, but moved here 30 years ago. We've been basically in Christian music for the whole time that Christian music has existed, and probably better known not so much for my husband and me, but more so for our children. Our eldest daughter is Rebecca St. James, who had a long 20-year career in Christian music, which is where our paths crossed with Darlene and her husband, Dan. And then 2 of our boys, Joel and Luke, are in for King and Country.
So cool. I just focused on the 46 years of marriage. That is so uncommon in today's day and age. So congrats to you on that. I'm sure that would be a whole nother conversation if we had time for it.
Yeah, I've realized that a lot of people, when some hard stuff happens, I think they marry with a Cinderella syndrome, that life's going to be great. And when some stuff happens, they pull out. But the beauty of a marriage that is longstanding, to grow old with someone and loving them and being loved and having such, joint history, is actually a wonderfully beautiful thing, which Darlene herself knows.
Absolutely. Well, as much as I would love to talk about that, I know we're here today to talk a little bit about more of the personal mom side behind the story you share in your new book, Behind the Lights. Darlene and I already kind of set up this conversation talking about how when you become a mom, it's so easy to kind of listen to the culture or even just the other moms that happen to be in the circles that you're running and assume that you have to do what's expected or what's, you know, kind of normal with the other moms around you. And that is not necessarily your story, I'm gathering. And I'd love to hear some of that. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what led you to want to write this story, your heart behind wanting to put these words on pages for us to read.
Well, thank you. David and I actually lived a pretty normal life back in Australia for about the first 15 years of our marriage. And then when he turned 40, we had 3 pretty dramatic incidents that took place that we call with closed doors. The most dramatic being that we lost $250,000 on a tour in Australia, because David was in Christian concert promotion in Australia. And we knew that this was going to mean major life change. So an opportunity arose for us to come to America. And it was the only opportunity that would allow him to stay in Christian music. At that point, Rebecca had done a little bit of singing and had been noticed by her Christian school as given opportunities there for recording and doing some songwriting, etc. And so we decided we would come to America. We came with 16 suitcases, 6 children, and me pregnant with our youngest daughter. We arrived in September 1991. We had just taken our kids out of the Christian schools, partly at the beginning of 91, partly because we knew they were going to take up space in a school, and we were planning on leaving a few months later. Our departure got put back. We arrived and settled in Nashville. And by the time we sort of got settled, school year had already started here. And so we decided we would just keep them at home. Plus, we were under pretty dramatic culture shock. We were on the other side of the world, no friends, no family. We were really living hand to mouth. We had no little nest egg that a lot of people would do if they were to tackle such a venture. We then realized that we needed to stay together, and that we needed to just really seek God's guidance and his provision. I mean, because the next dramatic thing that took place was a couple of months after we had got settled in Nashville, So in November of 1991, David actually lost the job that he came over for, which was a management job. And so we then were really relying very much and living on God and living by faith. So it was a pretty dramatic leave of departure, pretty dramatic arrival. But I just, and I know in all our stories, there are going to be times when people will have, you know, doors closed that just don't make sense, mm-hmm. or hard times come. But I have seen the goodness and faithfulness of God. I've seen God care for us in very deep and meaningful ways. First up with just provision, I mean, mm-hmm. food on the table. We were living in a house that had no furniture. The kids were sleeping on beds made out of clothes for about the first 2 months of us being here. And a local Sunday school class provided our house with furniture. And then once the community knew about us, the church just loved on us. Mm. And I think probably there have been more dramatic instances where we've stepped outside the box. But I feel like we can do that when we know, one, that God is with us on this journey, you know, that we're seeing his hand on our lives. Basically, we can pretty much do everything, but we've stepped big time out of the box because not only did we homeschool, but we all traveled on the road together. When Rebecca got signed to Forefront Records in 1993, we were very grateful. She was very young. She was only 16. And so by that time, we had so cemented our relationships together as a family that we couldn't consider her and David just going off and touring and we being left at home.
Oh,
so
Helen,
we decided we would.
Let me jump in here. Helen, you know, from my perspective, of course, we, my husband and the team at Forefront Records, we did sign Rebecca. And here's my view of the Smallbone family pulling up to mm-hmm. what we were in the Round building at that point. The uh-huh. Smallbone family had this van kind of thing that about 1,000 uh-huh. people felt like you jumbled out of, you know, all of you tumbled out, came into the offices, would have meetings. And then, Helen, what I remember is you got back in, and part of the way you made ends meet is you went and cleaned houses. Is that correct?
That's right. That's correct. So for those first 2 years, Rebecca, who was ages between 14 and 16, and Daniel, who was aged between 12 and 14, they were pretty much put food on the table. Daniel, we started as a raking business and doing it as a family. Then we were given a ride-on mower and a push mower, and we started doing mowing jobs. And Rebecca got very well known in our local community, both as a babysitter. You're not the oldest of seven kids without some skills.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And then we started cleaning houses, and some of the houses were so big that we would take either Daniel or Ben with us. So between all those jobs, we actually learned to work together. Mm-hmm. And that really was a foundation for us then going on the road. And we jokingly say that David saw cheap labor in the boys.
Okay, I know David. I think there could be a little bit of truth in that. I'm not quite sure, but yeah.
And so we would travel, and Daniel, when he was 16, he was shown how to set up and run the lights. And then Ben, who would have been 14, was shown how to set up the sound gear with an 18-year-old cousin of Rebecca's. And so that was the beginnings of us traveling and touring together. And we basically continued that all the way through both Rebecca's career, and then towards the end of Rebecca's career, Joel and Luke started singing together and doing support work for her, as well as Joel basically has been her background singer since he was 12 years old. Mm-hmm.
It's very out of the box, like we're talking about.
It's very out of the box.
At the time, Did you have a lot of people who kind of were speaking about it being so, you know, countercultural, so abnormal?
I think our families probably, my David's brother and sister-in-law in education, and my three brothers are all in education, Christian education in Australia. And I do think we did get some strange looks from them and some comments about, are we doing the right thing? My one brother was a principal of a Christian school back in Australia, and I do remember him sort of sitting us down and sort of trying to work out what sort of education we were giving the kids. And it really, there was definitely a lot of suspicion as to, you know, the journey we were choosing to travel. There are different times in our lives when we just don't either understand a situation, don't understand a child, don't understand a behavior, don't understand how to handle something. And we can sort of go online these days and research. But for me, the best research you can do is leaning into your relationship with Jesus and actually saying, God, you know this child. I mean, you know them inside out. What do I need to do in this particular situation? You're going to have to need to give me some direction, either insight to the child's behavior or how to handle it. And that happened to me on two occasions. One was Rebecca had just started touring. She had not finished school. She was in 10th grade. She'd taken 2 years to complete 10th grade. And I still valued at least getting a high school diploma. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, schoolwork's important here. You need to be focusing on this. And so she'd just come off one of her first tours on a tour bus. And I'd picked her up from the bus and was taking her home. And it was just her and me. And I was like, so she was telling me about stuff that had gone on the road. And then my next conversation was going to be, so how did the schoolwork go while you were the last 2 weeks? And I just felt God say to me in my head, and excuse the words, but he said, shut up. Mm-hmm. I don't want her to do it. And so I just sat there and because you know how in your mind you think about a conversation and I'm thinking about how I'm going to approach this. When I heard that voice in my head, I didn't say anything. Hmm. I just let my question die and just listen. And I realized in that moment, and later on I did mention it, and she said, it's just so hard. I feel so pressured. If I'm not songwriting, I'm out performing. And then I've got schoolwork, and I knew that God did not wish her to finish her schooling. So Rebecca basically finished grade 10, and it has not impacted her in any form at all. She's recorded 10 albums. She's written 12 books. She's made movies. She has life skills, you know, that are, I think, are pretty grand. And she's done stuff and impacted a generation of girls. So it really taught me something. And then there was one other time when we were touring with her for about a year, and I knew, in looking at kids' schoolwork, I just didn't know what to set, what my expectation should be. Because after, when we've done a day of a concert, which is really about a 12-hour day, I can't expect kids to do anything. I don't want to do anything. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Jesus and I just said, what am I to do here? What's my expectation for a school year with them being so active out on the road and working so hard? And again, I just felt his voice assure me that I will teach them what they need to know. Mm-hmm. And so basically I set reading. And then when we came home and we'd had a day or two's rest, then we would tackle actual book work. But out on the road, we didn't really tackle book work at all. We just... I just provided reading that was stimulating and interesting, both on history and the sciences. I have seen the fulfillment of both those promises that, you know, Rebecca was not meant to finish school, and that the kids, that he would teach them what they need to know.
You know what, Helen, I want to jump in here because I personally love this. I think we put so much stock in what education offers. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a great thing depending on what God made you to be.
That's it.
But how often do we spend so much energy on what is considered the prime parts of education and we ignore the arts? We ignore the creatives. We ignore, you know, that gets pushed
down. And we ignore the spirit. Like, you know, I look at a lot of our colleges these days, and I, frankly, my heart aches sometimes when I see good kids going into the college system, particularly the state college system, mm-hmm. because it just seems like they're sheep being thrown into a den of wolves. And so I agree. I feel like as Christian parents who love our kids, we know that when we become a mum, that that child is their own person under God, and that they have a purpose, that God has a purpose and a plan for their lives. And for me as a parent, it is my job to encourage the child on their journey to seek out who God has made them be and what is the reason and purpose for their lives. And when a child discovers that, then it's my job to encourage them, keep them God focused, and keep them focused on what God has called them to do, mm-hmm. and to grow them into who God has created them to be. And it's just a different way, I think, of viewing life, where we're viewing it under a godly perspective more so than a cultural perspective.
So true. My eldest daughter, Lauren, went to Biola University because she always wanted to go into film, which is what she has successfully done. But when she went, every semester she would say, "Mom, what should I take?" And I said, "Bible and film." "Okay, next semester, what are you going to take?" "How about film and Bible?" Because that was all. I didn't care about anything else. I really didn't, because I knew she was not going to complete college. That just was not going to happen, which was fine. But what I wanted in her was both her craft that she was wanting to develop and a foundation that enabled her to withstand what she would be facing when she got there. And I think those are the tenets of motherhood for Christian moms. And that does not mean you stay in the box of four-year college, send them off to do this, send them off to do that. You do exactly what you said, Helen, and look at your child. And who has God made them to be? What are their talents? What are their gifts? What are their passions? And you can usually find their talents by their passion. And when you discover that, then work on that. Forget all the other stuff, because it's not where they're going to end up being.
No. And so many kids graduate with, a Bachelor of Arts degree, made some big poor choices through college, and then never use that again in their life. I mean, you know, like never they go somewhere where their passions are. They've completed an education, but they don't. It's not actually where their passions are. So we went a different route. I mean, it's controversial. I feel that God gives us a living word that is specifically for us. But obviously, it lines up with the Bible. And really, when we stepped out of the box and we did things so differently, He did give us direction, and He cared for each of the kids as individuals. Like, you know, yes, the kids in the early days were working for Rebecca, but He was teaching them their own life skills, He was developing in them their own passions. And, now all of those boys are actually working in some form or another with King Country. Daniel, the eldest, still runs and programs and designs the stage and lighting for the boys. Ben is in film. We gave him a video camera at 16, and that's where his passion for film came in. And he has both doing film as well as all the music videos that the boys do. Then there's Joel, who's in for King Country, Luke, who's in for King Country, and then our youngest son, Josh, is a day-to-day manager for the boys, and then pretty much for the rest of the family as well. So it's definitely been interesting.
I would be curious, you know, if you can recall some of the conversations you had with your kids during this time, because certainly they must have been aware that the way your family was pursuing life and, you know, providing for your family and kind of the focus and being on the road and maybe allowing a traditional education to be on the back burner. Certainly, they probably recognized that that wasn't what was, you know, average, what was happening everywhere else. And so what were some of those conversations like with them as they maybe, you know, had questions about that?
I think the hardest thing, one of the harder conversations was when the boy, when we would come back off the road and they would go back into youth group, into their friendship circles, they felt disconnected. You know, kids were in their local schools, friendships in the local schools, and they were talking about stuff that was either going on there, right, and or, you know, on TV or whatever, and our kids just couldn't sort of slip into those conversations easily. So that was probably hard. Ben, who's the second eldest son, he found traveling and being on the road and not having his own life and identity, he found that hard. Mm-hmm. And he was actually the first to leave the road, I think at age 19, because he said he just wanted to pursue what his own arena and his own work. So there were times when different ones were expressing needs that went beyond probably the family. I remember a conversation with Daniel who said, Luke, I think you've made a mistake in having him homeschooled. He would have thrived in the school system. And he's such a talented sportsman that I think you've done him a disservice by not having him in school sports. That he could have probably used those then to go to college. So we did end up getting him attached to the sports program of a local school. And at about 16, maybe 17, we did take him, say, you know, you're going to make a commitment to the local basketball team and you'll go off the road and we'll find other place people to do your work on the road. And then He did make that active commitment because it was stimulated by my oldest son. Mm-hmm. And then he, on one of his first games, sort of with the school, he tore his ACL. And he knew that his career, any career, any future in sports was gone. Yeah. And that was a hard conversation because that was a direction that he had thought that he was going to go, and then God closed that door and he was very overwhelmed as to then where was he going? What was God going to do in his life?
You know, your family as a whole, beginning with you and David leaving Australia and the doors closing there and restarting again, and obviously the story you just told, your family as a whole has seen that time and again of God closing a door or shifting a focus. How would you say that that has taught them, your children, on how they want to live their lives?
I think they're all Jesus followers, all very active in pursuing and following Jesus, which is, as a mom, I don't think there's anything that is more, I don't know, fulfilling in your role. I mean, I've spent 32 years actively parenting, not that you ever stop, but that's from sort of starting with Rebecca to finishing with Libby when she turned sort of 18. You know, there's a lot of investment that we give, love, time in your children, and to be able to know that they're all following Jesus is a huge thing. I continue now in my own, I know that they're all adults, they're all doing their own thing, whatever. But I've so learnt over those years to look for the hand of Jesus that I continue to listen to their stories of what God's doing. And I'll say, oh, wow, you can see that God opened that door, or you can see that God closed that door. Mm-hmm. Just continue to lean into him as to his direction and just continue to look for his hand. So I suppose my role now is to come alongside them and encourage them on the same viewpoint that I've always had in my own life, which is if God's with me on this journey and he's opening and closing these doors, then I can take one more step and follow in confidence and being thankful that he's with me there. And so I suppose I've so learned that way of thinking that now I just walk alongside them and encourage them to see God's provision in their lives.
I'm sure your book is full of many more stories or specific examples of that. But as we kind of wrap up here, what encouragement would you give to a mom who maybe is kind of nodding along, you know, sensing the spirit that, you know, God is calling her to do things a little more out of the box than what's considered normal or common in today's day and age? How would you encourage her, or what wisdom would you share with her?
Well, Julie, I think that's really my main motivation for writing the book, to encourage others to step out of the box and to trust Jesus. I learned so, because we were doing life a little more radically, and because we leaned into being led by the Spirit, I learned so much more about who Jesus is, about his love and care for us. And my encouragement to anybody else who knows that God is putting on their mind and in their hearts that they need to go a direction that's countercultural, that's out of the box, step out. Mm-hmm. It's when Peter stepped out of the boat, keeping his eyes on Jesus, that he walked on water. So my encouragement is, God is not going to lead you to that new season until you take a step out of the boat, trusting him, keeping your eyes on him, and he will be with you on that journey, because he is good, he is faithful, and the plans that he has for you are to prosper you and not to harm you, to give you a hope and a future. And that's what he will do for you.
Helen, I love that. And I think our listeners will be real encouraged by what you have to say. And maybe step back and go, what do I need to do differently for this child that God's brought in my life? And I would also encourage them to pick up your book, because I know your story. And I think it is so well worth reading and getting a little bit deeper in.
Thank you, darling.
I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure, Helen.
Thank you, darling. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Well, I'm personally so glad that we brought that episode back, because I know I'm in a season of needing encouragement for motherhood. And I love how she, you know, took a different path, but an intentional path with her kids.
Yeah. And I really like the fact that she made it really clear that you could do it differently. You know, you look at her grown children now, and all of them, and there's a boatload of them, they have taken different paths, very successful, very creative, very unique, using each of their talents and gifts. And it's because they did a different road, not because they did the normal one.
Well, obviously, the fact that they've just produced this movie based on her life and on her book really proves that the way she mothered made a significant impact, as it's titled Unsung Hero, which literally her entire family feels that she is that unsung hero of their family.
So if this conversation or the book that she wrote, Behind the Lights, inspires you, then I would suggest you go out to see that movie, Unsung Hero. Because it puts the people on the screen that live the life that is so fascinating and so encouraging. The movie comes out April 26th, and Julie, I think I'm buying a ticket.
I think I'll go too. Well, Dar, did you pick a verse to end this episode?
Yeah, because as you said, they entitled the movie Unsung Hero, really celebrating their mother, which I think is a wonderful thing. So I went to Proverbs 27:2. Let another man praise you, not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips.
Love that. Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode, and go get your ticket to see Unsung Hero. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Grit and Grace Life. Make sure you've subscribed and rated and reviewed the show so more friends can find us. You can also share about this episode on your social media or send it to a friend you think it could help. You can find everything we talked about in this episode on our website, gritandgracelife.com, where you'll also find plenty of other articles from other women answering questions you may have.